Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Halfway home on a Friday. It's been a fairly woodsless week here on 97.3 The Fan. Here on Monday, his Hawaiian vacation continues. Paulie and I still hard at work, though, bringing you good quality sports and Padres talk in the morning here on 97.3 The Fan. Bad news for USA Olympic fans. I was holding out hope for the three-pointer and the foul at the buzzer, but USA Soccer loses 4-0. To Morocco in the quarterfinals.
I don't watch a ton of soccer. Is that how it works? You can shoot a three and get fouled?
Well, isn't that what that big line, that big box is the three-point line? And if you make a goal from outside the box, it's a three. And then if the referee holds up a yellow card while you're shooting and get fouled, then you get one of those penalty kicks, and that's the extra point, and you can get the four-point play to tie it. But they did not, and they ended up losing 4-0 to Morocco. They made a couple of layups at some point for their two baskets in the game, and U.S. soccer is out. But we're not talking soccer in this segment. I think we're talking some baseball, although he's usually at some, he's at the All-Star game, or he's at the, the Field of Dreams in Iowa, or he's at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. I don't know where Jordan is usually joining us from, but today, Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue, you're at a very special location. Tell everybody where you're at this weekend.
Oh, I sure am. Yes, I am. I was lucky enough to receive the exclusive invite to my dear friend Jake Mintz's bachelor party.
Wow.
Here at the beach in Delaware. So we are going to have a grand old time. Can you believe that I was like probably B-list, but I snuck on. And I'm here. We're going to have a good time here.
So is it one of those kind of low-key bachelor parties, or is Jake kind of like last dance before it's over and wants to get everything he's never done in before he ties the knot kind of guy?
I would say the likelier is the former.
Okay.
I was going to make, some joke about how, it's kind of like a Blake Snell start. It starts one way, and then you think you know what direction it's going, and then very quickly it can kind of head in a different direction. But I feel like it's going to be a little bit steadier. I think it's going to be more of a Michael King style. There might be some flash and some here and there, but for the most part, we're just here to have a good time and kind of get our work in and just enjoy each other's company.
So, Jordan, and by the way, of course, Jordan's appearances brought to you by Grand Ole Barbecue, Flint Springs, North Park, at the ballpark. It's San Diego's best brisket, bar none. Love it. It's amazing. So one of your annual traditions post-trade deadline is you rank all the trades, from the biggest to the absolute most inconsequential trades. I don't know, how many total did you rank this year, and what were your thoughts on the moves that the Padres made? Because they obviously had three of them that made your rankings.
Yeah, so there were, I think, almost 60 trades since the deadline, or since the All-Star break, I'm pretty sure. I ended up only ranking 50. But it's just kind of a fun exercise to think about it, because normally after the deadline you rank, okay, you'll see, oh, let's rank all the prospects that got traded, or here are the 10 most impactful. But to me, as someone who, gets to talk about baseball for a living, I'm thinking about it in sort of the meta, just entertainment factor, and thinking about a trade from the standpoint of how did this make it, did this make a ripple in the baseball industry in a way that we all wanted to talk about? Whether it was a good trade or a bad trade, was it an interesting trade? And ultimately this year, I like to kind of do them in tiers and organize it so it's a bit of an easier read. I probably did end up underselling the Tanner Scott deal, but also part of that is just the Padres. I'm so used to it. I'm like, yeah, of course the Padres traded four prospects for 2 months of Tanner Scott.
Wait, and it's not Juan Soto, yawn. Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe yawn is a bit of a stretch, but it is I have come to expect it. But it's also why I wore my Padres hat on our trade deadline recap podcast the other day, because it's this is the one team I can always count on. We've talked about this a million times with you guys over the last couple of years. This is the one team I can always count on will not just keep things interesting, but go for it. Keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. Have all the moves worked? Obviously not, but I feel like they've put themselves in a pretty strong position. And what I'm so interested in with the Padres in particular, this is really the first, you know, super bullpen they seem to have assembled during this era. And I'm curious where you guys are at in terms of how much confidence that gives you that maybe this year could end a little bit differently.
Well, it's big. I mean, you know, if you're a baseball historian, and I know you are, Jordan, you look at teams that have had success in the postseason, and they are often accompanied by a lockdown bullpen. I saw people going all the way back to the Nasty Boys of the Cincinnati Reds, in the early 1990s, the Phillies of recent vintage and all the arms that they can throw out of the pen at you. Some of those Yankees teams had, you know, when Mariano Rivera was the setup man, you know, before he was even the closer.
I read the comparison to the 2016 Cubs adding Aroldis Chapman yep. to their bullpen and that team.
I mean, the Rangers did the same thing last year. It seems to be a theme that teams that do well in the playoffs have deep bullpens, and the Padres have one now, Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. The Rangers performed like that, but we didn't necessarily expect it.
True.
Think this is one, you know, sometimes bullpens just kind of coalesce and they all get hot, and that's really what we saw with Texas last year and even with Arizona last year to a certain degree. But this is one where, and this is where it gets a little bit scary. I got to be honest, I'm not trying to rain on the excitement here, but it is a classic one of, on paper, boy, it sure looks good on paper, right? And now we have to go out and see them prove it. At the same time, I'd rather have four or five great pitchers on paper with great stats, with great peripherals, than not have them. I think the real question now is, as we come down the stretch here, is what I'm curious is, obviously, in a series where you can plan out your pitching in a very real way, you have off days, whatever, it scripts out very well for them. It lines up great for them. But I'm very curious how much they're going to lean on these guys just to get into the postseason. I think that is really maybe one of the biggest stories of the last few months for San Diego is, wow, it's awesome. Now Schilt can turn to a Scott, turn to a Jason Adam or Estrada, all these guys. But is your starting pitching going to make it so that these awesome relievers aren't gassed by the time you even get to October? I think that's what's really interesting.
Talking to Jordan Schusterman from Yahoo Sports, Espada's Family Barbecue, and I know one of you guys writing about Dylan Cease as well, and while the bullpen is important, and you know, Padres hoping to get back Joe Musgrove here soon, and maybe Yu Darvish at some point, and that depth in the starting rotation is key. Maybe the biggest chance for the Padres to succeed will be for just Dylan Cease to continue pitching the way he has the last few starts all the way through the end of the season and the playoffs, because, you know, he's been devastating. I mean, historically devastating over the last, you know, 2 to 3 weeks.
100%, yeah. And I'm so glad I got to write about him, and I talked to him right before his start in Cleveland, which turned out to be one of his best starts of the year. He, of course, follows it up with the no-hitter. We saw what he did against the Dodgers. But what he's been able to do recently, where he, again, stuff was never in question for Dylan Cease, but the fact that he's now throwing even a little bit harder and throwing more strikes than he has before at any point in his career is a pretty remarkable development and is the kind of thing. I mean, this is a guy that already finished second, you know, in Cy Young, so to say that his ceiling is notably higher is maybe a little bit dramatic. But again, like in terms of consistency, in terms of ensuring that you are getting a quality start basically every time out, I know he's walked three even in the no-hitter, and he walked three against the Dodgers, but that's still a pretty good lineup. If the command is really improved in a way that it seems like it has, that just raises the floor for a guy like him in a way that you didn't even necessarily know for sure when you acquired him. And that's what's so exciting about him, not to mention the fact that I think the most underrated thing about Dylan Cease, and you know, knock on wood, this guy's been the maybe top three most durable pitchers in the league, you know, since he became a starter. And for a guy who had a lot of questions about his delivery and his command and his mechanics and all those things as an amateur, it's a pretty remarkable achievement. And I think it's also part of why they were so willing to be so aggressive in acquiring him.
Jordan, we were talking earlier about the Padres' chances to chase down the Dodgers. That was a national topic yesterday, and even their chances at the World Series. But let's look at the two main teams standing in their way in the National League, the Phillies and the Dodgers, both struggling here. And the Phillies even more so. I think they have the second record in baseball since the All-Star break only to, of course, the White Sox, who haven't won a game since the All-Star break, or well before the All-Star break. In fact, we're closing in on, about a month since they have last won a baseball game, which is pretty much incredible. But of the two teams, the top teams in the NL that are both struggling, which one are you more, like, concerned about? Like, this could actually be a problem, or do you think both of them will get healthy, get out of their funk, and be back to who they usually are by the time, October rolls around?
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to see some more convincing signs of life for the Braves. I think how poorly Matt Olson was playing was maybe one of the more shocking parts of their season. But they're not going to magically get Ronald Acuna and Spencer Strider back, right? Like, there's some injuries that, in theory, they will return at some point in the second half. But I think at this point, it's hard to argue that the Braves' ceiling is anywhere near what we thought it was going to be, let alone anywhere near what the Phillies are going to be. And that's the question with them. I was really surprised that they, their one move being Jorge Soler is a fascinating one from a narrative standpoint. But I can say this about a lot of teams. I was just surprised they didn't go out and get more pitching. And so that's going to be something, is can that rotation kind of hang together? They've gotten this unbelievable season from Chris Sale and a lot of these relievers who have been, sneaky awesome. I don't know, though. I do think, like I said, I think that the Braves' ceiling is still substantially lower than certainly what it was. And I think that while the Phillies have not looked awesome recently, we're still holding them to the standard of what has basically been the best team in baseball for the better part of the last two or three months. So I'm curious to see how their additions actually fill in. How well does Austin Hayes really fit? How well do, some of the pitchers that they added, will they fit? Are they going to make that bullpen into something that is really special? Or will Estevez, I don't know. I mean, he's looked good so far for them. Tanner Banks, we'll see. So I would still say the Phillies are the team that kind of exists in a tier of their own. And then the Dodgers, I mean, that's the team, where the health-wise, I would say, is a little bit more of an X factor. I feel like those guys, if they are getting healthy, even if Kershaw, we don't really know what we're getting, if they are going to get Yamamoto back and Mookie back here soon, now we are still talking about a ceiling that is every bit as high as I think we thought it was.
Yeah, with the Phillies, Bryce Harper was calling out his own team, saying they're sloppy, they got to, turn it around. But I do feel like it's mostly we've been ahead for so long, they're just having a bit of a summary mental lapse, and they'll be able to turn it back on at some point. I can't imagine those struggles continuing. So, yeah, they'll probably be the Phillies at some point. Let's talk a little bit before you go about Mike Trout, who was shut down in his rehab and then issued a statement yesterday. Pretty sad, actually. Just a new meniscus tear, and he's going to be out for another rest of the season. He's played literally one game post-All-Star break in the last 3 years. But I was shocked, Jordan, because I saw some people going, is this going to hurt his Hall of Fame chances? I thought that book has already been closed. Once you've done enough to get to the Hall of Fame, you can't injure your way out of the Hall of Fame. Even if you didn't play another game, once you've done it and you put together the resume, it's over, right? I mean, has anyone ever done so poorly in their last few years that they took themselves out of like slam dunk lock Hall of Famer? What's your opinion here?
The answer to the question you just asked is Andrew Jones. Is really the answer. That is the most extreme version of that. Now, I can't say, because I was 11, like what we were saying as it started to get bad about Andrew Jones. Like, I don't know when it got really bad for Andrew Jones. He was not as good as Trout, obviously. But I'm just saying that's at least some sort of parallel where it was like, oh, he's clearly on a Hall of Fame track. And then it went off so bad that now he's obviously struggling to get into the Hall of Fame. But moving him aside, just focusing on Trout. I mean, what he had already achieved was so great. Not just, oh, wow. Well, I mean, he was literally, by some metrics, one of the best player ever through age 22, through age 23, through age 24, right? Three MVPs through age 27. You know, the obvious comparison, and we hit this a little bit on the podcast we recorded this morning, is Griffey, right? I mean, Griffey only made three All-Star teams in his 30s. Now, he still obviously sailed into the Hall of Fame and compiled an incredible amount of counting stats, which even Trout is going to kind of struggle to get to at this point, unless he comes back basically strictly as a DH and just starts hitting 30 homers a year and maybe isn't the all-around player. But no, he's open and shut. I don't think he has to worry about not getting into Cooperstown at this point. It's really now more about how do we see this end? But see, I feel bad and ridiculous talking about this as some sort of end of something. As frustrating as it is and how we've dealt with this the last few seasons, he's got 6 more years in his contract. He just turned 32. Like, Mike Trout's going to play baseball again in some form. I just don't know what it's going to look like. And the biggest bummer is that I have no reason to believe that the Angels are anywhere near even putting a team around him that, even if he's not the best player in the world, is going to get him anywhere close to October. That's what really bumps me up.
You know, good point about Andrew Jones, although Andrew Jones, like, played and then, like, stopped hitting. So some of his numbers, like the average and the slugging percentage, were dragged down. Mike Trout's not hurting any of his numbers. He's just not.
True.
He's just not playing. And you know, the comparison that I would make the most between Mike Trout, which is weird because it's a pitcher and not a position player, but it's Sandy Koufax is probably the most Mike Trout-like player. You know, Sandy's last year was age 30, went 27-9 with a 1.73 ERA, got hurt, never pitched again, but obviously obvious Hall of Famer for what he did before that.
And I get what you're saying, though, because when I saw that news yesterday, I had to look up Mike Trout's age because it just feels like he's older than he is. He's, like Jordan said, he's 32 years old. I got that. I read the headline yesterday, and I read his statement, and I go, man, is he done? Like done, done? I'm like, no, he's 32. Of course he's coming back. But it feels, there's like a small, slight sense of finality almost, it feels like.
Yeah, and I think and I should just correct, he's about to turn 33 next week. So, okay, so that's a little bit, whatever. But the point is, it's like, what it feels like based on all the injuries is that he's been more in his mid-30s. And that's the thing. But the finality, like I said, there's 6 more years in the contract. And so what does it look like? Are we finally at the point where he's not playing center field? You know, that's a real question. I mean, that's another amazing thing about Griffey, is even with the Reds and even with all the injuries, he still played center until he was like 36, 37. Is Mike Trout still going to be able to do that? I mean, he's still one of the fastest players in the league, even over the past 2 years. And so in theory, there's still a version of that, but we have to eventually start thinking about preservation and just what it's going to take to have him on the field all the time. And the really scary thing is how many different injuries it's been, right? It's not just one nagging thing. I mean, it's been everything at this point. And so that's what's most troubling. And we just have to hope, for all of our sake, regardless of whether it's in the postseason or on a bad Angels team, I think we all just want to see Mike Trout at least hitting again in the near future.
Jordan, you sound great. I imagine in 24 hours you won't sound quite as perky or peppy, especially after I just saw this tweet that Jake sent. I hadn't seen this. Said, having my bachelor party this weekend, think we'll just gather around the TV with a few brews and rewatch all 17 of the White Sox losses. So that's going to be a fun day for you.
why rewatch when we can watch losses 18, 19, and 20?
Just live, yeah. I mean, what's history? What's the longest losing streak all time?
24, 25.
Orioles, something like that? Yeah.
They got some work to do.
Yeah, but not that. Hey, I mean, we're a week away or so from potential baseball history there.
The 61 Phillies lost 23 in a row.
23 in a row. All right, that's
extremely, extremely in play. Extremely in play.
Awesome. All right, well, you guys get through this weekend, survive the bachelor party weekend, and I guess we'll talk to Jake next Friday and get all the dirty details of what went down on the beach in Delaware.
Yeah, well, thank you guys. Always a pleasure, and we'll see what the Padres do in the next week. It's always interesting.
Jordan Schusterman, Cespedes Family Barbecue, brought to you weekly here by our friends at Granol Barbecue. Yeah, I see people in the chat ready for some brisket tonight. If you're going to the game, you can get it there, or you can just make a night of it. Head down to North Park or go up to the Flint Springs. It's a ton of fun. It's a drive, but if you're ever out there, it's what a great place that is.
I didn't want to be mean.
What?
But what does one do in Delaware for a bachelor party?
It must be something nice. I mean, that's where like the president has his like summer house, Rehoboth Beach. He's from there, but I mean, it's. It can't be that tropical.
I just think of Wayne's World, and he's like, hi.
I've never understood East Coast beaches, the whole, you know, like the boardwalk, Atlantic City, like go to the beach on the East Coast has never made any sense to me whatsoever. But when there's a West Coast that you can come to, like San Diego.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do the beach, do it right. Come out here.
Why couldn't we get
or go to Hawaii
here?
Where Woods is? All right, we will come back. We got a Rindle report coming up. Did have some games last night in baseball that impact the Padres and the NL wildcard race. Get into those as well. It is Bennett Woods. Check traffic right now with Kelly on 97.3 The Fan.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to anything else, Paulie, well, first, thanks to Jordan Schusterman for joining us, but how about a birthday shout-out for Caitlin? Happy birthday, Caitlin, in the chat. Asked for it. You shall receive.
Happy birthday,
happy
Caitlin.
Happy birthday. I was actually just reading yesterday.
Stop calling me Carl.
Carl. Paul, a.k.a. Carl. I was reading one of the radio like trade publications. You know how every industry has a trade magazine or website that,
yes,
you know, but other people aren't going to care about. But even radio, we have things that we read, like tips and techniques to be better at your job. And what I was reading was that radio listeners, and tell me if I'm wrong, they love personalized shout outs. They'll listen longer if they think you're going to get mentioned by name. So
I would assume that's true.
Maybe we should just start, like, I just go through the chat. Shout out Tony and Jocelyn and Charisma, and shout out to the Goose,
shout out
and
Jeffrey,
shout out to Dominic and
shout
Simon
out Diesel.
I mean, this is good radio. This is apparently, the trades say this is good. Shout out to Tony.
Shout out Bo and Woodsy.
Shout out to Diesel. Watching. Shout out to Manny. Adam. Not that Adam, the other Adam. Shout out to Padre Bod. I mean, this is good, right? The trades say I'm doing good radio right now, keeping people listening. Shout out Rod.
The trades may say that's good radio. Somebody in their car is like, all right, get to it already. Jesus!
So don't shout out everybody on the YouTube chat, you're saying, Paulie.
It's, you know,
it's
Ben,
not
it's
good
Friday.
Radio.
You can shout people out for the next hour and a half.
You were a little distracted during our Jordan Schusterman interview, though. We had
just
the,
a little bit.
We had the soccer on our TV on the Olympics a minute ago, and then it switched to something else.
Yeah, I don't know what channel we're on right now. It's got the NBC logo there in the corner, but they've been bouncing
NBC.
Around. Well, they've been bouncing around very quickly. I don't know if they're just showing, if some channels only show one event for an hour or 3 hours, however long it takes. This channel has been bouncing around all over the place all morning, and they're playing on a weird basketball court, but then there's like big hockey goals. I go,
and your question was?
Jordan is literally on the phone and giving us an answer about, you know, Mike Trout or whatever, and I leaned over to Ben and I said, Ben, what effing sport is this?
Paulie, welcome to team handball.
Handball.
Is what they're playing. It's not like schoolyard handball where you're like throwing it off to the other person. This is different. This
We're
is team
Germany
handball.
Germany and Spain.
Oh, there's something exciting just happened. I think the Germans look very excited at the moment.
And Katie says in the chat, live coverage starts at 9, so these are probably tape delayed, but it says live.
I mean, it's like late in the afternoon in Paris, so I think it says live.
Maybe that's why they were bouncing around earlier.
You can't say live on your TV unless it's live. But team handball is an interesting sport. It kind of, as you said, kind of looks like basketball because they're like a three-point line and it's a basketball court. But it kind of looks like soccer. It kind of looks like lacrosse without sticks. It would be a good example, but the goal is bigger. But I honestly think the most apt comparison, it's water polo without water, because just like in water polo, you kind of, the offense is run the similar way, the goal is a similar size, and basically it's water polo without the water, and you're just running around and passing it to each other on the court. As far as I can tell, I'm not an expert in team handball, but that's what we're watching right now. That's what happens every 4 years.
Kind of fun. Out, looks kind of cool.
Have they started the breakdancing yet? I have not seen any breakdancing, which is the newest Olympic sport.
I'm not
breaking,
sure.
They call it. And
breaking.
I have not seen any of it yet.
I have not watched any of that. I watched a little surfing yesterday. It was cool.
And congratulations, by the way. San Diego just won a bronze medal in another sport that nobody's really watching. But Hans Henken is a bronze medalist in the men's skiff 49er class of sailing at the Paris 2024 Olympics. Well, it's not surprising that there's some good sailors here in San Diego, and they take home bronze. Kind of an upset as well. They came from way back. They were like did 12 races to get to the medal race, and then got third in the medal race. And congratulations to good old Hans and the bronze medal he's bringing home with his partner, Ian, from Paris.
Shout out Hans.
All right.
Shout out Ian.
There you go. Maybe they'll listen a little bit longer. Just a couple of games last night. It was a light schedule in Major League Baseball. Just a couple of games impacting the wild card race. The Braves opened a four-game series against Skip Schumacher's Miami Marlins. Skip, if you could just take one of those four, I'd be happy. Didn't happen last night. Braves won 4-2. It was close. Atlanta picks up a half game. They move one game ahead of the Padres for the top wild card spot in the National League. So Padres will start the weekend a game out of the top spot. And then the other game was the Cardinals. They were winning 4-2 in Chicago against the Cubs in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the Cubs rallied for three in the bottom of the ninth, walked it off for a 5-4 win. Costly loss to the Cardinals, who dropped two games out of a playoff spot, two games behind the Diamondbacks, and 2.5 games behind the San Diego Padres heading into the weekend. But those were the only two games with National League playoff implications yesterday.
Getting ready for tonight. I'm excited. I missed the Padres yesterday. Team's playing so well. I do not like off days right now, and yesterday was boring, but man, just going back to what we were talking about in that 7 o'clock hour, you have got to take care of business, and it starts tonight. Randy Vasquez, really hope he bounces back. Was not thrilled with his last start, but he had been pitching pretty well up until that one. Hopefully that's when you just kind of flush it, forget about it, but God, you got to beat the Rockies this weekend, man. You got to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, it was one bad inning. It was the third inning, so he didn't get to finish that inning. But for the most part, I want to think that Randy Vasquez is actually pitching better. He's been solid for a month, and I'm expecting solid Randy Vasquez at home against a much less dangerous lineup than the Baltimore Orioles one he was facing his last time out. The Padres may have won that series. That's a good team with a really, really good lineup. And yeah, he ran into trouble and had a bad inning. This is a different story. He should pitch better against the Colorado Rockies today. Again, I know I'm tempting fate, but I got to call it like I see it here. I can't just go, yeah, all the Rockies, they're a really dangerous, good team. And, you know, you got to take them seriously when they come in. Well, you have to take them seriously, but they're not. They're not a good team.
They're an unserious franchise.
The Padres should beat this team. 2 out of 3 minimum. Sweep them is even better. And, of course, you know that might not happen, but I'm not going to lie to you and say that you should be terrified of the Rockies coming in. No, you should be confident and go play good baseball and do what you absolutely should have done earlier in the season. All right, we'll take a little time out. Paulie's got a Rondle report coming up. Last night's NFL game did feature something I want to talk about. I think Paulie's going to bring it up. The new rule change in the NFL that was on display yesterday, and some initial thoughts on what is going to look very different from any NFL football you've ever seen in your life going forward this year. Coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. I got that 8:41 on a Friday feeling. Always a little nervous. Mike Schilt's going to join us at 9 o'clock, our manager's report. I don't know why. We talk to him every single week, but there's always just a little stress involved when you're interviewing the skipper on a Friday morning.
What are we stressed about this week?
Well, I'm stressed about asking him about Michael King and why he's not starting, because he's going to be mad that I ask him.
Hey, man,
but I have to ask him.
Why don't you leave the pitching decisions up to me?
I know. I'm not questioning. See, I hope he understands. I'm not questioning his judgment or knowledge. I'm just curious as to what's going on. And I know maybe it's not in the best interest of the team to
maybe he is pitching
reveal. He might be.
It's
but,
TBD.
But usually you just name your starters for a series and you leave it at that. Why is Sunday a TBA? Why is it not just Michael King? What could be the alternatives that they're thinking about? I mean, I'm wondering. People want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. So, and of course, get his thoughts on the trade deadline moves and the new Padres, and he's already employed most of them. Have not seen Tanner Scott yet. Looking forward to his debut, I would imagine, probably tonight at some point in the game. Maybe setting up Robert Suarez for a save. Who knows how they're going to use him, but we'll get Mike Schilt's thoughts in the manager's report that is coming up in less than 20 minutes from now. Up next, though, Paulie's got some headlines in the Rondo Report right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rondo Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rondo Report with Paul Rindel.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindel Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a hoy? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
I need some help, please, Paulie. So it away on the Rondo Report.
All right. Let's start. We had a football game yesterday. I kind of completely forgot
Monday
about that.
Monday Night Football. Are you ready for some football?
It was Thursday.
Yeah, but it was the Monday Night Football ESPN ABC crew.
But it was Thursday.
Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
Shouldn't it have been on like Amazon Prime?
I don't know. The days of the week are less important than the branding of the football.
Yeah, well, it was the Hall of Fame game between the Chicago Bears and the Houston Texans, and apparently the Bears won.
Chance to see Caleb Williams in action, except for the fact that
not quite.
Caleb Williams didn't play. Who did play? I don't even know. I had it on TV. I have no idea who played in the game.
Brett Rypien threw for Chicago, 166 yards and 3 touchdowns. And we mentioned it at like the very, very beginning of the show today. If you're looking at the box score like I am right now, it tells you that the Bears won 21-0.
Dramatic fourth quarter.
In that fourth quarter, nobody scored. In fact, there's not even zeros in there because they didn't play a fourth quarter.
No, not even most of the third quarter, actually. Isn't the football the sport
you're, lightning?
You're supposed to play in the rain? It was a nasty storm. They kept showing the radar coming up, like, you know, all the, you know, green is just like the regular rain. They had all the oranges and the yellows and the reds, and it was like
don't they play like a high school field in Canton?
It's like a mini stadium. It's not like a full like NFL type stadium. It's like a quaint older stadium that's attached right there to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I think they realized there's no point in sending. I mean, someone's going to get hurt on a sloppy, muddy field, even if we do go back out. Someone gets struck by lightning. It would have been a bad decision to continue that game when it doesn't really matter. But the game did feature the NFL's brand new kickoff rule that is being implemented this season. I mean, you may have forgotten it was announced many, many months ago, but when teams kick off, they're no longer going to all line up next to the kicker who then kicks it and you run down the field like our entire lifetime. I mean, they've moved it from the 35 and the 30 and the 35, but this is totally different. So the kicker is the only one who's back where he normally is at the 35 kicking the ball. But then the rest of the coverage team is over on the other side of the field, like at, I want to say like the 30 or the 35, and then the receiving team, everybody but the guy or the two guys who are deep, they're just 5 yards away, and they're lined up 5 yards away.
So it's going to look more like the XFL?
Yeah, the XFL has done this as well on kickoffs, so the NFL is going to do it. And the idea is pretty simple, reducing those high-speed collisions, like not letting guys who are NFL-quality athletes get 40 yards of momentum before they barrel into someone at the field. So it's the 35 and the 30.
The kicker is by himself.
Back at the 30 kicking off, and then there's one or two guys deep to receive it, and no one moves until the kick is caught by the guy, whether he's like catches it at the goal line or at the 5.
Once that guy's blockers who have their backs turned to him have to like also be turned around.
They react to the team that's going to go. As soon as you see the team twitch, like they're about to run, you know, okay, he's caught it. It's time to go. You see where it's heading, either to your left or your right over your head, so you know which direction you're kind of blocking. But there is a lot of strategy. They even talked about it on the broadcast last night. Some teams are handling it a little more like the old style. Others are trying to block like it's a play, like a line of scrimmage play, because it is much more like a line of scrimmage than a special teams play now. There's going to be some interesting elements. Now, nothing interesting happened. I think it was returned the kickoffs like to the 26 and the 26 and the 30 or something. I mean, there was no big breakaways, but the safety is the key here, but not completely taking the kickoff play out of the game. It's the old we're going to make a change, but not completely making the change because we don't want to just go to, all right, you get the ball at the 25-yard line just to start, and we'll just throw away kickoffs completely.
Yeah, well, there's your football talk.
Thank you.
Friar Friday. We're going to move on to the Olympics. There was a story that kind of took the internet by storm this week.
Quickly, Alex asks, what about the onside kick? You can do an onside kick, but you got to like announce it, and then they'll do it the normal way. But it takes, okay. I mean, there's no element of surprise anymore, so it's tough. Unless they didn't implement the 4th-and-13 thing that they were going to talk about doing for onside kicks. I don't think they did. They talked about it, though. I'll have to look that up, Alex. Sorry, Polly, go ahead while I look that up.
No, that was very riveting. I'm glad we talked about it. Thank you. So, Georgia, I'm sorry, I don't know how to say her last name. Villa. She is an Italian gymnast, and the internet lost their minds.
I think you say the L's in Italian.
Villa?
If it's two L's, you say them together. If it's one, then it sounds like it's a Spanish two L's.
Okay, so we'll go with Villa. Georgia Villa is a gymnast for Team Italy, and the internet lost their minds and fell in love with her because they found out that she is partnered up. She has a sponsorship with Parmigiano Reggiano. And she has, like...
The king of cheeses.
Yeah, she has posted many pictures of her and just, like, large chunks and wheels of cheese. Parmesan cheese.
I want to be sponsored
by Parmesan cheese.
I want to be sponsored by Parmesan cheese. Well, she looks so happy with her big, giant wheels of cheese.
Why would she not be?
That's a great sponsor.
She won a silver medal earlier this week with her team on Tuesday in the all-around final. And so, yeah, she's bringing a silver medal home and a giant wheel of cheese.
No offense to the farmer's dog, which is great for my dogs. But I want to be sponsored by Parmesan cheese. Are you listening out there, Parmesan cheese executives?
You've got a Mile Casino. We just wanted to thank you for all the good times.
Yeah,
but,
we're going with Parmesan cheese. Jim says she sold out to Big Parma. Good one, Jim.
I like that.
I mean, there's got to be...
That's got to be one of the greatest sponsorships of all time.
Yeah, there's got to be a lot of different like cheese makers, though. Is it just like there's the Parmesan Cheese Council and they like and they are like avocados from
Mexico?
How
did that come together?
You know what? I'd also like to be sponsored by avocados too. Let's get that done. We need more food sponsorships. I mean, I love the Kung Pao Chicken. I'm kind of sponsored by the Kung Pao Chicken at Sammy's at 7 Mile, but.
She posts the sponsored content on her Instagram.
What would Woods be sponsored by?
Zen.
Jersey Mike's for sure. Something very plain. I mean, I would be sponsored by pizza. Pizza would be a great sponsor.
Just pizza.
Not like
Domino's.
I mean, we have round table pizza, so we kind of do.
Just
I mean,
pizza.
We get it. But just in general, just pizza. Ribs. Bennett Woods brought to you by Ribs.
It says she signed up for the on-brand partnership with Parmigiano Reggiano. And
Manny says, I think that's a Gouda move for her.
A Gouda moves.
You guys
she signed up back in 2021 and said, I'm very happy to be part of the great Parmigiano family. Since I was a child, I've always loved this amazing product, a symbol of excellence and Italian culture. And since today, being able to collaborate with them makes me extremely proud and excited to face future challenges.
It's fantastic.
And now she's winning medals in the Olympics.
Ben and Paul, brought to you by ice cream.
What would be your, like...
You love it.
Your
we love
dream
it.
Sponsorship.
I don't know.
Parmesan I guess you're like,
cheese is really
your
good.
Goofy is sponsorship.
There, I mean, is there anything better in the entire like the experience of going out to eat at a restaurant when you're at Italian and you order a nice plate of pasta and then the waiter comes with the fresh Parmesan
Say
and
when.
Asks, "Can I offer you some freshly grated Parmesan
you're
cheese?"
GD
and
right,
they just
you can.
Go and of course, I mean. It's like one of the best things about eating out is the
Say
freshly
when.
Grated Parmesan cheese. And I always feel like they're going to judge me like, no, keep going. I mean, it's hard to do too much of that Parmesan cheese on top. And then I feel like sometimes I order something and I know it's not really supposed to have Parmesan cheese on it, but I want it anyway. It's like, can I have some anyway? I mean, just put it on my side dish or something just because I want the Parmesan cheese. I would be the perfect American to be sponsored by Parmesan cheese. They have an Italian gymnast. Maybe an American radio host also needs to be sponsored by Parmesan cheese.
I'll send this clip over to them and let them know.
I mean, if we're American, I'll be sponsored by cheddar cheese. I like cheddar.
Cheddar cheese.
Ben and Woods.
I like cheddar.
I like cheddar a lot. Good sharp cheddar. Sharp cheddar cheese is going to bring you our next segment. Well, actually,
Chipotle would sponsor our next segment.
California Coast Credit or San Diego County Credit Union sponsors our next segment. So let's be clear about that, because it is our manager's report with Mike Schilt that is coming up in our next segment. And we will get the latest from the skipper on what's going on with the San Diego Padres post-trade deadline, pitching rotation, the matchups for this weekend, the playoff race, talk about that two-game sweep of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He, plays up the losses, like, you know, what happened good in the losses, mm-hmm. and, you know, always is looking on the bright side. He downplays the wins as well. When you'd say, hey, you guys are really rolling right now, he will go like, yeah, you know, just, you know, taking it one at a time and, you know, just trying to play the best baseball we can. He doesn't upplay the wins. He just downplays the losses.
That's, to me, more because he expects them to win every night. And he's like, yeah, that's what we do. Like, we're a good team, and we play good in a game like that.
Yeah. And he doesn't single out a ton of things. I mean, he'll bring up some good plays and stuff, but it doesn't feel anywhere. It's totally different. It's a totally different vibe when the Padres win. It's like, he's cool, he's casual. When they lose, it's like, did you see this? Did you see that, though? I mean, we got a good team here, and he's defending his guys. When they win, it's like, yeah, you know, it's what we're supposed to do. Mike Schilt joins us coming up next here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan, brought to you by Cheese.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.